It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter here on WGN Radio. And I'm calling you from Sitka, Alaska, which means it's the middle of the night here. It's definitely dark, so I can't tell you what's going on outside, but I can, for the first part of this show, bring you up to date on what's, I think, an incredibly exciting opportunity taking place in Sitka and actually in throughout Southeast Alaska. So last week, as you may recall, I was talking to you from the prairies and what was occurring there. So moving around a little bit, which in the fall I love to do. So Sitka. Ketchikan thinks it's the salmon capital of the world. Sitka is the salmon capital of the world, Salmon City, if you will. And much like Stuttgart, Arkansas, which named itself and branded itself, it's worth millions of dollars annually to them as the duck hunting capital of the world. And some might argue, well, there's a lot better duck hunting in other places in the South than Stuttgart, but Stuttgart claimed that and they've owned it and they've built a huge industry off it. In Alaska, salmon is everything. Nothing happens without salmon in the entire ecosystem, as I went up to Sitka to learn more about. So Ketchikan, which has been at it longer, much bigger in the cruise ship business, it was the salmon capital of the world. Well, I can attest that after having been to Sitka and talking with individuals and seeing what I saw, no, I actually think Sitka is the salmon capital of Alaska, Salmon City, if you will. So the purpose of my going was to really understand what's taking place in the industry around salmon and the keystone species element of being a salmon. And there's an incredible IMAX film about to be released called Upstream, The Journey Home, produced by the same entities that produced the highly successful Wings Over Water film and also the recently released Secrets of Great Salt Lake film. And as you know, I've been involved in those from a conservationist perspective and believe very much in them. Alaska is the last best place, and Montana likes to call itself the last best place, but that was before a river ran through it, which led to a realtor running through it. Now, Montana is not the old Montana 50 years ago by any means. Sitka, Alaska still is. It's authentic. It is absolutely the heart, the pulse, along with Bristol Bay, of the salmon fishing industry in the Pacific Northwest, Alaska, and the Pacific Rim. And salmon are the species that drive everything. So in viewing material on this soon-to-be-released film, Running Wild, I was struck by the fact that nothing lives without salmon. And the notion that trees are actually carnivores. And if you think about that, how can a tree be a carnivore? Well, the Sitka spruce, I mean, they don't physically eat, but their roots eat, they consume. The salmon drives the entire ecosystem. And without it, the entire ecosystem crashes. So Upstream, The Journey Home, while it's about salmon, it's not. It's about everything that relies on salmon to live and how we avoid having an ecosystem collapse, which for some species of salmon, we're seeing that right now. King salmon or Chinook, as they're known, are in free fall. We don't really understand why. There are certain stretches of the Pacific Northwest and the Pacific Rim where different salmon species are having real trouble. While sockeye and pink salmon seem to be thriving by and large, so there are things going on, but the one thing that is absolutely true is there are no trees, there are no eagles, there are no bears, there are no whales, there are no seals. There is no life in Alaska, coastal Alaska, without salmon. And that's what really struck me as I toured Sitka, spent time talking to people. Naturally, I had to test the waters myself, and I can let you know that the water is cold and it's full of fish. And fly fishing in remote areas around Sitka, in country that is spectacular beyond belief, you don't even have to like to fish. In fact, just being on a boat as we were one day, touring conservation areas and actually delivered someone's package to an island, is an experience in and of itself. The authenticity of what I saw in Sitka and how different it is from Juneau and different it is from Ketchikan, two cities that have been overrun by cruise ship boats and millions of people. I think there are 1.8 million people that went to Juneau this past year on cruise ships. Sitka's not that way. Sitka has it under control, and Sitka is going to thrive because it has taken a very thoughtful approach to the cruise ship industry, and Sitka has a lot to offer for a cruise ship passenger. Most of all, what it has to offer above anywhere else in Southeast Alaska is the opportunity to be authentic and to be engaged and to be educated. This is not manufactured entertainment as you see often in Juneau or Ketchikan. This is real wild Alaska. You can go to a state park. You can watch salmon run. You can go to a commercial fish hatchery. You can go and watch how salmon are made and cooked and the whole industry revolving around salmon. You can get outdoors without getting on a helicopter and being taken to see a glacier with boats whizzing you around. It's a different experience in Sitka, which is why I think Sitka has so much upside in the future in the cruise ship industry, because it's in control of the cruise ship industry as opposed to the other way around. Juneau, with 1.8 million people coming, the cruise ship industries dictate what's happening in Juneau. Sitka is a place where they're finding a balance, where you can have the authenticity without destroying Alaska, and you can at the same time give hundreds of thousands of people a true Alaskan experience. So the fishing in Sitka is the best in Southeast Alaska. Certainly Briscoe Bay is on a level of itself, but when it comes to commercial fishing and the experience, and I've fished all over Bristol Bay, I've had that great fortune throughout my life, Sitka is, when it comes for scenery, you can't beat Sitka. And Sitka is known for having absolutely terrible weather. Well, define terrible. I was there for 3 days in the outdoors. It never rained on me. I saw a few clouds. It was in the upper 50s. It was spectacular. Now, I realize those might be minority days in Sitka, but that's part of the whole experience. Sitka's in the heart of the Tongass rainforest. If it wasn't the rainforest, the Tongass trees wouldn't be there, the forest wouldn't be there, the Sitka spruce wouldn't be there, the salmon wouldn't be there. And what I really came away from Sitka feeling is it runs to a very different beat, a very different pulse. And we'll talk more about this next spring, because there are going to be some things happening in Sitka that could be pretty interesting for the future of conservation and also for tourism. But it's still an Alaskan pulse. It's not overrun with simply T-shirt shops and all the things that you are accustomed now to seeing in so many of these ports where cruise ships spew simply have disembark over 1 million people a year. It's not that way at all. It obviously has its Russian heritage. So this is not a show on the promo of Sitka, although I think Sitka is an absolutely fabulous place, and it needs to be treated as such. We can't love it to death. We can't overrun it with people. It's not being overrun. It's still unchanged. But the key to all of this is salmon. If there are no salmon, well, there's no Sitka. There's no Juneau. There's Alaska dies. Coastal Alaska goes away, and we have an ecological catastrophe the likes of which we've never seen, frankly. And so salmon are the keystone species. And if you go to Alaska and you want to see a humpback whale, thank the salmon. If you want to see grizzly bears and coastal brown bears, thank the salmon. Everything you see, from the incredible number of bald eagles to the marine life, it's all a result of salmon. They come into the rivers, they spawn, they die, and their carcasses provide the nutrients that feed the entire ecosystem. So think about this. A bear comes to the river's edge and it eats a salmon, and it walks miles into the woods and it does what bears do in the woods. And that fertilizes and provides the nutrients for the trees that need to grow. So miles and miles and miles away from the sea itself and the rivers itself, the influence of salmon is driving the ecosystem. And this is something the world and many, just hard to understand. We think of salmon as a species. Salmon is the driver of an entire ecosystem for much of the Pacific Rim. And the heart of it is in Alaska, in the United States of America. So if we figure out how to sustain and manage salmon, we have figured out how to sustain and drive this incredible ecosystem and make everything possible that's possible in coastal Alaska, British Columbia, northwestern part of the United States, there. The Tongass National Forest, which is enormous and full of some of the biggest trees you'll ever lay your eyes on, those trees only grow because it rains a lot and there's a lot of nutrients in the soil, all provided by salmon and the animals that carry salmon away from the rivers into the forest. I had an incredible time, and I will say, if you like to fish, which, as you all know, I love to fish, I would make an effort to go to Sitka, Alaska. The fishing in Sitka, the salmon fishing, is second to none. The scenery is second to none. And you're going to do it without the hum of airplanes and helicopters and float planes flying over, which unfortunately has taken over so much of Alaska. Sitka is still down to earth. It's going to stay that way. But I learned a great deal about really how we're going to keep it this way. And in the discussions that are coming up with the Tongass National Forest and timber harvest, I realize we absolutely have to cut trees. If we don't cut trees, these forests will not recycle. But there are ways to do it, and there are ways to have it be done in a way that sustains the economy and sustains the entire fisheries industry. So I had a terrific experience. It's dark here. I'll be back in just a moment with more on the Great Outdoors Show. And when I do, I want to talk a little bit about something that I encountered in the prairies, which was a pleasant surprise to me. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go, worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host, leaving Sitka, Alaska and southeastern Alaska for the year, as I will be shortly. Today, I want to take you back to where I was a week ago. I did a commented on my trip up to northwestern Manitoba with my son and all the experiences you have when you canoe paddle for over 40 miles in 4 days and the things that happen, good and bad. But I also had an experience with the people of Manitoba and Saskatchewan who I've known for decades. And I had been told, erroneously, fortunately, that Americans were really not that welcome, that what had happened over the past 9 months had turned Canada sour on Americans. And I can tell you firsthand, I did not find that at all. The people I've known in Canada and Saskatchewan, in Manitoba and Saskatchewan, were as welcoming as ever, as glad to have Americans there as ever. What they're fearful of is the loss of the number of Americans coming because of the perception that Americans aren't welcome. And I especially saw this in Manitoba. License sales for waterfowl hunters in Manitoba are plummeting. They're down, I believe, close to 40% from where they were just 3 years ago. And a driver of that is, as I've talked about, are the regulations in Manitoba, which are so restrictive and punitive on Americans coming to hunt waterfowl in Manitoba and upland birds. So if you are going hunting in Manitoba, you used to buy a combined license, an upland bird hunting license, and a waterfowl license. Now you're required, first of all, to go into the draw lottery to get a waterfowl license, and you're required to buy a separate license if you want to hunt upland birds. So an individual coming to Manitoba to hunt for a week for waterfowl is all they're permitting right now, is going to spend over $500 if they want to have both licenses. A lot of people aren't doing it. A lot of Americans have said, to heck with Manitoba, I'll go to Saskatchewan, or moreover, I'll stay in the United States. I'm fed up with being treated the way I am. So the tourism industry for hunters, particularly in Manitoba, for waterfowl hunters, is evaporating. There's a lodge up in an area in northern Manitoba that used to that has 56 beds, and it used to, for a month straight, be filled with hunters from Wisconsin, Minnesota, Illinois, and elsewhere, largely who drove up, and they hunted there, and it was just part of their life. The lodge is closed. Not a single hunter occupied a bed this fall. No demand. They're gone. And they're gone primarily because of the regulations that stopped America, made it so difficult for Americans to come. And the people of Manitoba don't understand this. And I can say again, firsthand, I have friends all over the province, and they are furious at the Manitoba government for being so restrictive on Americans. They don't see the logic, other than a few people in the previous administration in Manitoba who were anti-American and had hunting places where Americans liked to go, and they had the political power. There was no science behind what they did. Canadian licenses, I think the number of Manitoba licenses for waterfowl hunting used to be in the neighborhood of 12,000. I think now it's down to less than 5, maybe even 4. Non-residents used to be 3,500 to 4,000. Now it's down in the low 2,000s. The whole system's collapsing, which means that the tourism industry will collapse, and the industry around waterfowl hunting and the visitation of Americans, which spend a lot of money in Manitoba, is evaporating. And Manitobans are not happy about it. Whether it's the individual where I've bought gas for the past 4 decades, is now his son runs it, he's furious. Whether it's the guy who ran the lodge and has nobody coming, the whole system is crashing, and they're not upset at Americans. They're upset at their Manitoba government. So that's what I learned when I was in Manitoba and also in Saskatchewan, that there's no animosity towards us coming. There may be some grumbling about what's happened, but we are very welcome, as we always have been. And I consider many of my Canadians to be our best friends. So that's my report from Canada. But as I sign off, I do want to say the state of Utah did something really brilliant. The waterfowl season opened. Public hunting in Utah is the means through which most hunters and hunt waterfowl in Utah, and the director of the state's Department of Natural Resources, Joel Ferry, worked out a deal to get the U.S. refuges open so the hunters could hunt in Utah on federal lands. That's how dedicated and serious they are to hunting in Utah. Don't hope you hold your breath to see that happen here in Illinois. Thanks for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.